best cowboy's hat.
Welcome back to the Jeff Porter Show at FM Talk 106.5. Thanks for being with us on this Wednesday morning. Text line 251-343-0106. Joy Clark coming up in about an hour, and then in the 11 o'clock hour, one of our regulars, former state senator Dick Brubaker, will make time for us, so stick around for that. Joining us now from the road on the campaign trail, always a pleasure to bring on my next guest, candidate for the 1st Congressional District on the Republican ballot on August 11th, Austin Sidwell. Austin, good morning. How are you?
Good morning, Jeff. Doing great, man. How are you doing?
Doing well. Well, what are you hearing out there? How are you feeling about it?
I'm feeling good. We've gotten a surge of momentum over the last week, 2 weeks, and people are starting to listen. As we're getting closer to this thing, a little less than 3 weeks out, people are really starting to perk up their ears and pay attention. And I think the more people we get in front of, the more our message is getting heard, and we're feeling good about it.
Well, tell me, and I asked your opponent this yesterday, kind of what are you hearing when you're out and about on the campaign trail? What are the concerns? I assume gas prices, but what else?
I was about to say affordability is still the biggest issue. I think it's been polled as the biggest issue for months and months now. It's still kind of on the ground what's going on. We hear a lot about the war in Iran, just kind of uncertainty with, you know, being in, out. I think, you know, people of Alabama are just kind of ready to see where that goes. If we're going to end the war, then let's get in there. Let's do our job, finish it out and get out of there. But just the uncertainty around that, and obviously the gas prices that are associated with it. And then we're starting to hear a little bit of a response with Social Security. The report that came out a few weeks ago, people are starting to get a little bit nervous that the largest Social Security fund is going to be insolvent in the next 6 years. So they're ready to start hearing some fixes and hearing some ideas on that.
Well, let's start with the Iran war, and this seems to be something you are very knowledgeable in. I mean, you hear from the administration, the media, you know, it's hard to know where they're coming from. A lot of it's just through the prism of a political, you know, whatever's politically advantageous. But what's your perception of that situation?
My perception is I don't know if we bit off more than we can chew, in the sense of we thought it was going to be quicker. We thought that the airstrikes there were going to lead to us being able to control the strait quicker than we have been able to. I mean, but we know the history of Persia. I mean, this is a very formidable force, and I think it takes time to break down, you know, what they have built there. I know personally, I would like to see us, you know, If we're going to stay there, I don't want to see boots on the ground, but I could see us continuing airstrikes. Let's devastate their forces right there along the Strait of Hormuz, and let's give the control back to the GCC and pull out of that region. I think that would stabilize it a little bit with the alliances that have been formed there over the last few years and over President Trump's first term. But I don't think there's any appetite by the American people to stay in this war for any significant amount of time.
What do you make the discussion? There's some reports here as a counterbalance, making Saudi a nuclear power, Saudi Arabia, that is. It makes me a little cringy, but I don't know. Is that the solution here?
I don't think so. I think you have nuclear powers in the region already, and I think that has the balance it needs to have. And as long as we keep Iran from developing their nuclear weapons and their ballistic missile program, then there's no real need to overbalance that with Saudi Arabia having nuclear weapons. I'm against that, just straight up. That would make me kind of uncomfortable.
Yeah, and then Trump this morning on True Social, I mean, for every ship you hit, we're going to take out a piece of your infrastructure. I mean, is it going to be that kind of hardball tactics? Because the Iranians, They will agree to something, and then 2 days later they've already reneged on their you know, whatever they've agreed to.
And that's kind of how they've negotiated for decades. I mean, I've heard, obviously I've never been in the room in these negotiations, but I've heard that they are some of the most difficult people to negotiate with, because there's no limit to what they'll say to get what they want. And yeah, we may have to go after a little bit of infrastructure. I mean, you've seen the shift of oil production coming back to the Gulf of America, coming back to us with our capture of Venezuela and what we're doing here in the Western Hemisphere, I think that, 80% of the world's oil now comes out of this hemisphere. I think that that is, and maybe I'm off on that, I don't remember. But we're seeing the shift. And as long as it shifts to where we can control the oil, why not go after some of their infrastructure? We've already choked out China, and that's just going to continue to do that.
Well, and then there's, and they're talking about this on Capitol Hill a little bit, that the suspicion, at least, that Russia and China are providing the Iranians with intelligence, that's allowing them to be very, that's giving them a precision that we didn't expect from the Iranians. I guess there's no like hard evidence of this that we that's publicly available. But does that sound like something that's possible?
Oh, absolutely. I mean, and you know, definitely on the China front, they've been partnered with it. We know that Russia's close with China. So them sharing intelligence and kind of plussing up what they don't have and kind of giving them structure while we've completely, you know, eradicated their leadership there, I think that that's the only reason why they've got the organization that they have now. I don't know. We can go the sanctions route. I mean, obviously, China's going to continue because we're hurting them pretty directly by doing what we're doing in the Strait and preventing oil to get to China. So it doesn't surprise me. I'm like you. I don't have any of the intelligent insider information on that.
Well, you know, does it behoove China for this conflict to be prolonged? Because they seem to be the ones most harmed by the spigot being cut off of the Strait of Hormuz. Or is that just old, outdated conventional wisdom?
I think that we have to remember that China thinks in centuries, not four-year political cycles like we do. And I think that their plan is long-term, and their control over their country and their government's control over the country allows them to think longer down the road. I think we see it as right now, it's choking resources, it's hurting them, but for whatever their strategic purpose is, we may be talking 20 years from now that they're planning out. So I think that that's just a different mindset that they have in the East and that China has had for quite some time. So, yes, it doesn't make sense from my perspective that we have here for them to continue to draw this out. But, you know, looking out long term in the future, they destabilize the region. It may allow them to put their hooks back in there and get more control over time.
Joined by Austin Sidwell. He's a candidate in the 1st Congressional District. Tell me what you make of this. On the Democrat side, Tabitha Iser, she's the vice chairwoman of the Democratic Party, encouraging Democrats to go out and vote in the Republican primary. What do you make of that? Because she's encouraging people to vote against Jerry Carl, but what's your take?
I mean, this is what happens when we don't have closed primaries. I mean, it doesn't surprise me. It makes sense that they're going to try and manipulate a vote. I don't know how much that's going to resonate, but getting people out, you know, on the Republican side, the vote on the August 11th special primary is going to be difficult because it's a weird election cycle. It's kind of an unknown race. The media coverage on it has grown, but people still, I mean, I get out and talk to people every single day, and we're talking the percentages of people that even know this is happening. These are primary voters, and they're just not paying attention to it. So she can say what she wants. I don't know if that will move the needle at all.
It will be a low turnout event, and that's, you know, in that case, every vote counts, as you well know, and if it's super low turnout, I mean, it's entirely possible. I don't know that it'll change outcomes, but it could.
It could, yeah, and there's definitely a possibility of that, and, you know, maybe this will get us to close the primaries and restrict that influence, but as it sits right now, I don't see that happening in the next 2.5-3 weeks, so if that's what they choose to do, then that's what we just need Republicans to come out and vote for who they want.
Yeah, well, you know, she's out there beating that drum, and you can't ask for any better favor than having the chairwoman, or vice chairwoman, I should say, of the Democratic Party come out and say, hey, go vote in the other party's primaries if you were trying to make the case for closed primaries, I would think.
Yeah, I don't think so either. And I would assume I would assume that this would help that argument and lead to, you know, maybe them getting closed in the next cycle. But we'll just have to kind of see.
You mentioned affordability a little earlier, and we, you know, hit the gas price discussion. But the other parts of that, you know, the other, you know, key indicators, just everything is more expensive. You mentioned it. But what do you do there? We're not going to go back to pre-2020 COVID pricing in America. We're kind of stuck where we're at. We just need to, I guess, manage it a little bit better.
And manage it. And I think it goes down to inflation. And we got to make sure that we hold our dollar and hold its value. And it goes into spending. I mean, we see that this is a product of, you know, both Democrat and primarily Democrat under the Biden administration COVID spending, but it's also Republican spending. I mean, we have got to get to the idea that, you know, when we print more money, it's going to drive down the value of the dollar, which adds to inflation. And I just don't think that across the board, and one of the reasons I'm running for Congress is because I think that we get so caught up in these spending packages that we forget that, hey, you know, as conservatives, we're supposed to want a smaller federal government. We're supposed to be fighting for less spending. And I think that that would actually resonate and help affect some of the rising costs if we could stabilize the dollar and get inflation down.
What, when you talk about Social Security and its insolvency, and I've been hearing this my entire life, but what do you do there? Always when they try any kind of entitlement reform, it's grandma getting pushed off the cliff by someone who looks like Paul Ryan or whatever, and it becomes it becomes a third rail.
Yeah, and I think the first thing you got to do is stop tapping into that piggy bank, right? So Congress, I believe, has taken about $2.5 trillion out of Social Security over the last few decades. So we need to stop that. We need to make sure that those funds are dedicated only to Social Security, and it's not more slush fund money that Congress can just use for whatever pet project. So that's the first thing. The second thing is the fix is not increasing payroll tax or increasing the age of withdrawal. So we have to look at new revenue streams in order to start plusing up that account again, those funds. I am a huge fan of the 401k based idea where we start, you know, your money is your money, and it's just the government putting it into something that matches the S&P 500 so that it can grow with the market. But right now it's just a stagnant fund that, you know, we can go in there and pull money out of whenever we want to. So first thing is stop taking money out of it. And the second thing is look for new ways to grow that revenue, to add more revenue to it. And it's not going to come from the taxpayer base. You and I both know we tax people enough in this country.
We'll wind it down on this. The idea, well, let's talk about the I-10 bridge. And I know it's not directly a federal issue, but it will involve some federal money. But, you know, the talk about a $7.70 toll baseline, I know that the state's going to do some things to give local commuters a way around it. But where are you on that? What do you think of this latest iteration?
I think it's absurd that we're having a toll. Absolutely absurd. And everyone I've talked to thinks the same thing. And from my understanding, you know, a lot of the push was for a bayway fix, right? Like we have a 2-lane bayway that gets ridiculous every single day with the amount of traffic that goes across there. This $3.2 billion project is going to be a different route over the canal for the port, not necessarily to fix the jam up that happens on the bayway. That's been pushed to phase two in this project. So I think we've been led astray a little bit with what this is going to do for us, right? I get the expansion of the port. I understand that eventually we're going to have to look at deepening the water there so that we can expand. But right now we need a bayway fix, and none of that money is going to go to it. And I'd also like to figure out what kind of loophole they're using, because technically when you've got federal money coming into a project like this, you're not supposed to be able to use tolls. The state's not allowed to collect tolls. So I know that they've built in some loopholes in those federal statutes, but this is putting the onus back on the people. Now we get taxed federally, we get taxed locally, we get taxed at the state, and now we're going to have to pay to drive a bridge for people just to get to work. I just think it's a little bit ridiculous, and I think that with $3.2 billion, you think that we could figure out how to do this and incorporate the Bayway instead of some new bridge that doesn't really fix the problem.
Also, if folks want to find out more about your campaign or get in touch with you, how could they do so?
Absolutely. SidWellForCongress.com is our campaign website. You've got my contact information there, as well as you can find us on social media, Instagram, Facebook, X at SidWellForCongress.
Also, we appreciate the time. Safe travels.
Absolutely. Thanks, Jeff. We'll talk to you later.
All right. Also, SidWell, ladies and gentlemen, let's get a break in here. We'll be right back. This is the Jeff Poore Show on FM Talk 106.5.